The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
First this morning, those missile strikes have continued over the weekend in the Middle East, with tensions showing no signs of easing after Iran named their new supreme leader. To discuss the latest now and find out how it impacts us all here, I'm joined by Sky News foreign correspondent Alistair Bunkle, who I'll speak to in just a moment. I'll also speak to Professor of Economics at the University of Galway, Alan Ahern, and Consumer Affairs correspondent Conor Pope. But Alistair, to you first, and can we get a sense from you of the developments over the weekend? We've heard about the spike overnight in the oil price, but what has led up to that point? What's been happening?
Well, over the weekend, sort of in brief, the attacks have continued on both sides. So the Americans and the Israelis have been attacking targets in Iran pretty much kind of relentlessly. They now have air supremacy, certainly in the western part of the country, so they can fly air missions without too much risk to them. So they're kind of clearly working through a target list, and they're managing to do so without any considerable opposition. Iran has been firing back, though, and like we saw through last week, not just at Israel, but targeting countries around the Gulf region in particular, despite a promise from the Iranian president that they would stop doing that. We've seen a surge in the oil price, partly probably connected to Israel bombing a major oil refinery near Tehran. And I think significantly, the appointment of a new supreme leader. The last supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was killed on the first day of the war. Last night, it was confirmed what we all kind of had sort of suspected, that his son, Mojtaba, is his successor.
So just going back to what you mentioned there about the Iranian president making that apology, it felt almost like an aberration, apologizing to the Gulf states for targeting them, giving a vague commitment that they wouldn't do it again. But very quickly, we saw that actually he may not be have the authority to say what he said in that regard.
Well, Masoud Pezeshkian, who is the Iranian president currently, I mean, his authority, you know, even before the war started, has always really been in question. And I think the recorded message that he released, apologizing and vowing not to attack those countries, only for the attacks to then continue on those countries, just underlines that he is not the man in control in Iran. Far from it. I think you'd need to look at Ali Larijani and the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard, who seem to be pulling the strings at the moment. And the element, of course, that, and this is pretty much all but confirmed, that because the command and control structure has been taken out, or elements of it have been taken out, a lot of the, particularly the Revolutionary Guard units, are kind of operating autonomously and operating according to orders that were given to them following the 12-day war in June last year. And so, you know, they are still doing that. And any kind of message from the president is either being ignored or it's not filtering down.
So we're 2 weeks in now, and initially President Trump said this would be a four-week war, five on the outside. Any indications as to where we are in their strategy?
No, sorry. I mean, it's a slightly ironic laugh. I would say that militarily, the Israelis and the Americans are having an awful lot of success. As I say, you know, three U.S. soldiers killed pretty early on, I think, in a drone strike in their base where they were in the Gulf. But apart from that, and of course, some, you know, civilian casualties as well across the Gulf and Israel. But militarily, you know, they are able to take out targets pretty much at will. And they're doing so, and they'll continue to do so. What is missing is whatever the strategy is. Mm-hmm. Is it about regime change? Is it about Iran's nuclear program? Is it about securing American access to Iran's oil resources, for example? Whatever it is, we don't really know what Donald Trump's endgame is, because he's told us that it could be all or any or none of those things.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it will start to get really sticky.
Yeah. And the other question is, if the US decide to stop, you know, if Donald Trump gets spooked over oil prices, what will Israel do? And we don't have an answer to that question either, do we?
Well, my gut feeling, and I lived until very recently in Israel for many years, is my gut feeling is that Israel would be pretty content at attacking Iran sort of, you know, for as long as they possibly can do. I mean, it's not the same. But you look at Lebanon, there was a ceasefire in Lebanon 18 months or so ago, and Israel carried on attacking Hezbollah positions, you know, if not on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. But, you know, they can be, you know, they are influenced by America's position. Donald Trump does have sway over Benjamin Netanyahu. And so I think probably they will try and do whatever they do in concert. But I think it will be the Americans who probably decide enough is enough before the Israelis do.
Okay, Alistair, we'll leave it there. Thank you for bringing us up to speed with what's been happening on the ground in the Middle East over the last number of hours. As I said, I have a Professor of Economics at the University of Galway, Alan Ahern, with me now. And thank you very much for being with us this morning, Alan. So we see the G7 now have this emergency meeting where they'll discuss whether they should approve the release of oil reserves to mitigate against the spiking cost of oil and what's been described as an oil shock. What's your take on what's been happening?
Well, these are pretty dramatic movements in oil prices, very reminiscent of what we saw after the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022. So this is deja vu all over again. Huge increases last week in international oil prices and dramatic increases overnight. So a barrel of crude oil is now up to about $107 a barrel, very close to where it was, the peaks back in the during 2022. And also natural gas prices have gone up a lot. They jumped about 20 pence per unit overnight. They're about double what they were a few weeks ago. And that's important because we use a lot of natural gas. We use it to heat our homes, and businesses use natural gas. And about 40% of our electricity is generated using natural gas. So this will spill over into electricity prices. This is stuff exactly what we've seen before, if you just go back a few years in 2022. So we're just seeing this huge energy price shock again. I guess the only consolation might be that other commodity prices have not jumped in the same way. If we remember, Ukraine was the breadbasket of Europe. So following the war in Ukraine, wheat prices and barley and other sort of food prices, they all jumped. Mm-hmm. That's not happening this time. It is more narrow, focused on energy prices. But we have seen huge increases, not quite as high, but who knows, in the next few days and weeks, prices may reach those peaks. And that then spills over to all sort of increases in household bills and businesses' costs that we saw a few years ago.
Yeah, Alan, you'll know the problems that this brings to government store. We heard the hauliers this morning, they're up in arms over this. But essentially, what it means is that the price of just about everything is going to go up. And very quickly, we start to look to the government to say, well, what can you do about this? Now, what's the answer to that question?
Well, there were a lot of cost of living measures introduced 4 years ago, some of them very quickly announced in February 2022 and came in a few months later in April. And then big cost of living measures in the budget in October 22 and the following budget. So the government did an awful lot. Part of it was aimed at energy to try to stem the increases in energy prices. But it was broader than that. There were lots of cost of living increases. Cost of living measures, for example, getting down transport costs, reducing fares, reducing fees for universities. So also the cost of free books. Those were all measures. They're not directly aimed at energy costs. But what they did is that they put more money into people's pockets, so reducing the cost of public services. And then their people could have more money in the pockets to be able to afford the higher bills. And of course, we had the electricity credits and stuff like that. So a lot of stuff was done. And I'm pretty sure that the government is thinking very carefully now about what sort of measures will be needed to give relief to both to households and to businesses.
Well, you know, they've been holding firm since the budget last year on this. And Jack Chambers reiterated last week that, you know, energy credits weren't in his purview, but you're saying that they may change their view given what's happened overnight.
Not just overnight. I mean, over the last couple of weeks. I mean, this is pretty. This is very recent, who knows how long this lasts? I mean, some people would say, well, it could be all over in a few weeks' time. Others would say, well, this will go on for months. And if it does, well, then there's going to be very high energy costs. And as you said, spill over to other sorts of of costs, which we saw 4 years ago, where the price of everything went up and inflation went up, and that would call for government measures, and I'm sure there would be packages introduced if that's the scenario we're facing.
Well, you heard the hauliers this morning; they want something done now when they're paying over €2 a litre. Are you saying that now is not the time? That you've got to wait for this to play out, and if it's still going on in 3, 4, or 5 weeks' time, then that might be the time to act.
No, I didn't say that. I mean, as I mentioned, the last time we had some measures introduced very, very quickly, and then there were more measures, bigger measures introduced a bit later. So maybe that's the strategy to follow. So I'm sure there's consideration being given to some measures being introduced fairly soon.
What are the early measures that the government could take now?
Well, maybe, excise, for example, and I don't know whether this would be the right or wrong thing to do, but the last time there was a quick move on excise on petrol and diesel. And that gradually over time, the rate of excise on petrol and diesel was restored to where it was pre-2022. So that's a potential policy lever. And there are others. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of orders, there's certain subsidy schemes and stuff like that. So that can all be considered. But I think it would make sense to do something fairly quickly and then watch for developments. That's exactly what happened in 2022.
Uh-huh. But the excise, you're saying, would be a quick win. You could do it immediately, really, to alleviate some of the pressure.
That's a possibility. Yeah, that's something that I think consideration should be given to. That is an option. And then one of the other issues we think about is cost of living and the impact on people is how central banks respond to all this, because the last time we saw central banks raise interest rates when they saw inflation picking up. So if that's the way it's going to pan out again, that we're going to have big increases in inflation, and central banks may well respond to that. So as well as higher energy prices, we may see in the near future interest rates starting to rise, as sort of double whammy.
Okay, it's not a great outlook, is it, Alan? Thank you very much for being with us. That's Professor Alan Ahern. Well, our reporter, Sarah Madden, has been speaking to some motorists at fuel pumps this morning. Let's hear what they had to say.
Fuel's gone up terrible. Like, it was 1.70, now it's gone to €2. That was scandalous.
I have indeed, yeah. I have. No, it's gone up a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money.
That's a fine big jump, all right, yeah. Yeah, from what we were paying before, yeah. Yeah, well, we're going to 208 now, yeah. It was, I think it was 172 there maybe about 2 weeks ago. So it's gone up to now 208, yeah. So a big jump.
I'm just wondering how much you are paying today for fuel.
Well, I don't even fill it anymore because it's too much. So half a tank is, what is it, 60, 70? So not cheap.
For €120. Yeah, and it was only 100.
€96. Yeah, madness. But you look, what can you do? I got to drive around. I can't, as you can see, this is the industry that I'm in, that I have to drive around. So I have to just kind of pay it and keep going about my daily work, you know.
Some people can't afford to work as it is, like going out and back to work and things like that. But another thing we have to deal with, isn't it?
Do you think the government should be doing something to cap the prices at least?
Some sort of a help, yeah, would be great, yeah. But I don't know, what can they do?
They should try and bring diesel back down again to where it was at 1.70 a litre. Mm-hmm. At least then we make a living when you're driving.
Make a living when you're driving. Sarah Madden there out chatting to people who were filling up at the petrol stations this morning. Conor Pope is with us now, consumer affairs correspondent with the Irish Times. I'm sure you heard Alan Ahern there, Conor, saying that a quick win for the government to release the pressure here on people would be to cut excise duty. Do you see that might happen?
I'd be amazed if it didn't, actually, Claire. And one of the reasons is one of the big winners from the spike in fuel prices in Ireland is the government, is the Exchequer. Because every time diesel, petrol and home heating oil goes up, the percentage or the amount of money that the government makes from each litre sold increases, because around 40-50% of the total cost of fuel in Ireland is made up of taxes and the public service obligation and all these other things. So the government does have wiggle room, and that's exactly what the then Minister for Transport and Energy, Eamon Ryan, did in 2022 when fuel prices started to creep up beyond €2 a litre. So I'd be amazed if something quick didn't happen on that score. And like, the price hikes and the price spikes that we've seen are almost unprecedented in some areas. Because, I mean, I know that there was a lot of attention on home heating oil last week. And I just checked the price of home heating oil this morning. And for 500 litres, it's €837.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by way of context, the Friday before the American and US, American and Israeli attack on Iran, the price was €498 same 500 litres. So it's almost doubled in price. And I think Alan touched on it there when he says, when he said that, you know, we don't know exactly where this is going to go. And an awful lot of it will depend on how long the conflict lasts and what happens in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. But if it is a sustained conflict, then what you're going to see is you're going to see the European Central Bank start to increase its interest rates to combat inflation. And what we saw during 2022, 2023 was interest rates went from 0 to 4.25%. Now, the net impact on an awful lot of Irish consumers, tracker holders, people who are coming off fixed rate mortgages, people who are getting new mortgages, worked out around €300-500 a month. So that was the interest rate impact. Then you have the fuel impact, which is costing, as Sarah, your reporter, found out, costing motorists maybe €15-20 for a tank of fuel extra. And then you have the knock-on impact of the higher cost of food and groceries in our supermarkets, because all of the price hikes that we're experiencing as consumers will also be experienced by farmers, by food producers, by transport companies. And that's why we saw it in 2022. And I think one of the depressing things for people now is we've already seen this happen. And now we're seeing it happen again. And we're still suffering the cost of living impacts of the war in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's potentially the impact of this war in the Middle East.
Because the prices didn't come down. I mean, inflation moderated, as in the increases stopped happening, but they never came back down to where they were, certainly.
That's exactly right. So at the height of the crisis, I think in the summer of 2023, grocery inflation was put at around 16%, which is staggeringly high. But today, grocery price inflation is around 6%. So you might look at that and think, oh, 6% is much better than 16%. But it's, of course, 6% on top of the 16%,
yeah,
not instead of it. And it's the same with fuel prices. And I think sometimes it's easy to characterize or to show the impact when you talk about, like, domestic energy prices. So in 2021, the average Irish household was spending around €2,000 all told on their energy costs. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine, that spiked to in excess of €4,000. So a massive increase. And ever since then, prices have started to fall. But the typical Irish household now is spending around €3,200 on their energy costs. So it's still much higher than it was in 2021. And it could still get much, much higher in the days and weeks ahead. Now, the one thing I would say is we are more protected in this country than they are, for instance, in the United States. And I think this could actually become a pivotal point and a key point when it comes to how this conflict plays out. Because the American fuel market, particularly petrol, diesel, is incredibly sensitive to price shocks on international markets, because there's a very low percentage of the cost of a price of a gallon of petrol, as it would be in America. The taxes don't really have that much of an impact. So if it goes up to €117 or $170, that really impacts American motorists. Because we pay around 40 or 50% of the cost in tax, we are somewhat protected in that score.
Okay, well, let's see whether it impacts Donald Trump and his decisions in the coming days. Conor, thank you very much. That's Conor Pope there from the Irish Times.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.